It's back. Listen. Oh, it's lovely. Hello and welcome to episode 25 of The Cute Life. I'm Finley.
I'm Ollie. Welcome to the winter edition.
And this is our fire. It's back. It's back, everybody. And
finally, we've got over summer.
That wretched summer.
The burden of summer's over.
Well, it has been warm today, but as soon as the sun sets, and the evening creeps in, it gets a little bit chilly. So I currently have a hoodie, my pyjamas, and a fluffy blanket sitting next to the fire. I mean, some would say it was overkill, but I'm a cosy lass.
I think it's a very English thing to be surprised that in September the days are warm but the evenings are cold. Like, everyone's talking about it.
Oh, it's shocking.
It's like the talk of...
I mean, it happens every year, but it's still, like, I can't wrap my head around it.
It's like, the weather is exactly what you expect it to be in September. And, like, when I was walking around in London today, like, everyone was talking about it. They're like, oh, it's nice today, but it's chilly at night. Like, yeah, of course, it's September.
Oh, I really don't like September. It just makes me feel so depressed.
Why? This is the nice bit. February's when it's awful.
Yeah, I know, but I think it's just like... months. No other time of year just feels like that real... Have I already talked about this on the podcast? I feel like I talked about it on Instagram, so I'm getting deja vu. Just like that change in the air where it's just like, it feels like change. I don't know. I think it's because it's like the dread. I used to have the dread of back to school, and just the weather changing really reminds me of like having to get up and put my school uniform on again. It feels like being trapped.
Yeah, I think there's that feeling of like, because the summer holidays obviously felt like they lasted forever.
Mm.
And then you get that, like, when your mum would be like, oh, it's back. You came back to school next week. And then suddenly, like, your stomach dropped.
You're
like, shit.
Oh, I really hated it.
No. And then every day was ruined from that day until the end of the holidays.
And you're just counting the days down until you had to go back to hell.
And then you went and it was fine.
Yeah. Well, kind of. It depended what year at school I was going back into.
Exactly.
Anyway, yeah, so just...
Yeah. That's how we feel about the season.
Yeah. So, Ollie.
Yeah.
This week, I have got a huge list of things to tell you about. So
this is excellent, because this Ollie's week I've got nothing.
Yeah, Ollie's going to sit back and listen to me divulge stories and things.
Okay.
This is mainly following on from what we talked about last week, and I just had a big list of things to talk about, so I did research.
Oh, that's good.
What would you like? Can you remember any of the things that we touched on last week?
I mean, was it hedgehogs last week?
Oh, yeah. So that is my cute thing that this week. Do you want me to start with my cute thing?
Yeah, let's go in with the cute thing.
Okay, I'll tell you what I've got. So I've got my cute thing, hedgehog history.
Thank you.
I've got the Versailles story,
okay,
which I mentioned that I can't believe you have never heard of because it's really famous.
Yeah.
And I've also got the South Island place ghost story, which is, we used to live in Oval, and I think Ollie was like researching like the area we used to live in, and he came across this absolutely stellar ghost story, which he said he'd forgotten about last week.
I still don't remember it.
Yeah, so I found that, and I can remind you and tell everyone at home the fungo story.
Excellent. Oh.
What would you like me to start with? And I've got a couple of recommendations as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
Let's go in with a bit of hedgehog facts.
Hedgehog facts. Okay.
Save the ghost till last so that people can't sleep tonight for okay. Your ghost story.
Let me get my laptop. Okay. So you mentioned last week, my cute thing last week was sea urchins.
Obviously.
And the fact that they're called sea urchins because hedgehogs used to be called urchins, and then so sea urchins, therefore they look like hedgehogs. They're
aquatic hedgehogs.
Yeah, they're hedgehogs of the sea. And then Ollie, last week, you were like, oh, like, didn't they, like, weren't hedgehogs lucky in the medieval times?
Right.
So I was...
That doesn't sound like something I would have announced, but sure.
I mean, go back and listen to it. You said something along those lines.
If only there was any record of what I'd said.
Go back and listen. You said something like that.
I believe you, but I'm just saying.
Anyway, so I was like, I want to know. Oh no, you said something about tapestries.
Yes, I'd seen a hedgehog on a tapestry.
Yeah, so I found some medieval artwork with hedgehogs in them, which right. I shall show you. And, ooh.
Hang on. Wrong.
My computer's frozen.
Finn's got a virus.
I haven't got a virus. Okay, no, it's fine. I just wasn't clicking the right button.
Left and right confuses the best of us.
So, hedgehogs...
Just for anyone listening... Finn's computer doesn't have a left and right click. It's just one button.
It's one big button, so you can see why it's confusing.
There's no wrong button to press.
No, but you press on one side of the button for one thing and the other side. So if you press in the middle, you don't know whether you're left or right, you see?
All right, if you say so.
Okay.
That's
so,
not true for anyone listening. It's just one button.
Shh. Oh, by the way, we're drinking this... week.
Oh, good luck pronouncing this.
Well, I have to pronounce in French later, so I better
get in the mood with a bit of German.
Schoffer Hofer. Oh, I think the two dots mean a oof, don't they?
Schoffer Hofer. Yeah. Okay.
Which is a great fruit beer, which if you say, I think it's in most. Supermarkets, but if you spot it, it's bloody
delicious. In all local Morrisons.
Oh my god, it's so fruity and delicious and quite sour and
only 2.5%, so you can drink it at work and it just is basically like a strong Fanta.
It's so delicious, I'm obsessed with it. Anyway, so there's lots of medieval folklore about hedgehogs.
We're going back to the hedgehogs.
Yeah. So there are stories about them. From this particular one was from the 11th century, so the 1200s.
Right, yeah.
That's right, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. So the hedgehog has this is the folklore, okay. One of them. The hedgehog has the appearance of a young pig that is entirely covered with sharp spines or quills, which protect it from danger. When it is time for the harvest, the hedgehog goes into the vineyard and, climbing up the vine, shakes grapes off onto the ground. It then rolls around on the fallen grapes to spear them on its quills so it can carry the fruit home to feed its young. Some say that the fruit the hedgehog carries away is an apple or a fig. It rolls itself into a ball and spines to protect it. Oh yeah, when the hedgehog notices the approach of a man, it rolls itself into a ball so its spines protect it, and it creaks like a cart to fool the man.
Right.
Hedgehogs can detect the direction the wind is blowing from. When the wind comes from the north, the hedgehog closes the north hole of its lair.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
Sounds like... bumhole.
Yeah, I think that's what it's saying.
Right? No, but what it's basically saying is that they used to believe that hedgehogs used to shake the grape trees so the grapes would fall off the trees. Then they used to roll around in them to pick up all the grapes onto their spines and then take the grapes home to their babies.
I mean, that's...
And there's a Latin... This is in translated from Latin. And then I found...
How did they come up with that? Like, that? No one had ever seen that happen.
And then I found this...
I mean, it's a good idea, though.
Cute little animation... where they animated it, and then... I mean, this is very boring for a podcast, but it's like a little...
It's like a little stop motion. It's like the tree's made out of paper and then the hedgehog's made out of felt, and it's shaking the tree.
So this is what they thought happened.
I mean, it's a very good idea. I feel like that's a drawing you need to do, is a hedgehog covered in
grapes.
Wait,
look, and then here is... Oh, sorry. I'll stop.
Just screaming. Here it is.
Look, and this is the medieval drawing.
Oh, wow.
Of the hedgehog with the grapes on its back.
So it literally looks like, you know, when you have tinfoil and you put cocktail sticks in it with little cubes of cheese on. It's basically the hedgehog version of that.
Yeah, so... Oh, wait, this one says it's from the 7th century, that story.
Jesus.
Isn't that crazy? And then there's another one. Oh, yeah, this is the 13th, the 12th to 13th century, that sinners were compared to hedgehogs.
Sinners?
Yeah. All of its sins were... So, like, each of the spines, each of the quills represented one of its sins.
Jesus Christ, that hedgehog's been up to no good.
Well, yeah, so, don't know, just found that, yeah.
I mean, I love the idea.
I loved it.
Obviously, everyone loves the idea of a hedgehog rolling around in fruit.
I mean, who doesn't love it?
It's and carrying it back thing. Home.
It's brilliant. I loved it. So cute. So I'll link that story and the little animation because it's really cute.
I think you've got to do a drawing of a hedgehog with grapes
on its back. So sweet. Wait, I had another Oscar, but it's disappeared. Anyway, so that was my cute thing, the medieval story about the hedgehog rolling around in the grapes, and that's what they used to believe they did.
I just think that's amazing that in the 7th century that's what people were coming up with.
I know.
At the same time,
much more imaginative.
Yeah, I know. It must have been a fun time to be alive. Everything was made up and there were no facts.
My other one, which I...
It's a bit like this podcast.
This is what usually happens when I go down a rabbit hole of something, that I start opening and closing loads of tabs and then I lose the original one that I found. But another one was that they thought that hedgehogs used to suck the milk out of udders, like the cow's udders.
Wow, that's a...
I mean, everyone pointed out that, like, I mean...
It's a bit of a height difference.
How does it fucking get up there? And also,
they could climb
hedgehogs.
They can climb grape branches.
Yeah, that's true. They're good climbers. They could climb up those cow legs, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But I suppose if the cow was lying down, maybe. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, shit. It's gone out of my head.
Hedgehogs. Cows.
Cows.
Taps.
Oh, yeah. Hedgehogs are lactose intolerant, so it's like a lot of people like leave milk dishes out for them, but it makes them very sick, so you should only leave water out for them, not milk.
Okay. Or Schopfenhofer.
Schopfenhofer.
That's what hedgehogs really like.
Right, so did you enjoy that story? Right, I'll go on to my next one.
Very good.
Do you want time travelling Versailles, or do you want South Island Place Ghost Story?
Time travelling Versailles.
Okay.
So this is the story that's so famous that everyone knows it except me.
I feel like, well, I knew about it. That's practically everyone. No, but I feel like it's quite famous. Okay, it's called the Morbid... I didn't know it was called this.
Okay, so...
The Morbidly Jourdain Incident.
Okay. Still have never heard of it.
I think I have heard of this through a podcast because... well, I'll explain in a minute. Okay,
Give
so...
Give us the story.
The Morbidly Jourdain incident, or it's also called the Ghost of Petit Trianon. Please excuse my pronunciation throughout the whole of this.
Small.
Or Versailles. Mm-hmm. Is the claim of time travel or hauntings made by Charlotte Anne Moberly and Eleanor Jourdain.
Okay.
So, in 1911, Morbidly and Jourdain published a book entitled An Adventure under the names Elizabeth Morrison and Frances Lamont. Their book describes a visit they made to the Petit Trianon? a small chateau in the grounds of the Palace of Versailles, where they claimed to have seen the gardens that they had been in the late 18th century, as well as the ghosts, including Marie Antoinette and others. Their story caused a sensation and was subject to much ridicule, as you
can
imagine.
Okay, wait. I need to clarify 2 points. Yes. When was their book written?
In 1911.
And they claimed they'd gone back in time to the 18th century.
Yes.
And their book was called The Adventure.
The Adventure.
That's a terrible name for a book.
Well, yeah. Well, they weren't actual authors, so I think...
Well, they were time travellers.
Yeah.
Couldn't they have travelled forward in time and seen that people would say that the title of their book was shit?
Okay, do you want to hit... So this is what happened.
Okay.
That it says in the book. Morbidly and Jourdain recounted that they had decided to visit the Palace of Versailles as part of several trips around Paris, detailing how, on the 10th of August 1901, this is a lot earlier than I thought it was. I thought it was in the 30s. Toby's barking at time travellers outside. Detailing how on the 10th of August 1901, they travelled by train to Versailles. They remembered not thinking much of the palace after touring it, so they said they decided to walk through the gardens to the Petit Trianon.
Jesus, just choose a pronunciation and stick with it. You're either wrong or you're right.
Trianon. But after reaching the Grand... Oh, fuck's sake. Found it was closed to the public.
Go on.
They recollected travelling...
Recollected.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so dyslexic. They recollected travelling with a Baedeker guidebook, but they said they became lost after missing a turn for the main avenue, Allée des Deux Trions, and entered a lane where they bypassed their destination. Mobley reported that she noticed a woman shaking a white cloth out of a window, while Jourdain recalled noticing an old deserted farmhouse, outside of which was an old plough. Sorry, I think we're going to have to pause because Tova's having a fit. 1 second. Hello, sorry. Once again, Tova's decided to ruin our podcast recording, as is tradition by now.
If anyone's wondering, she was just barking at the darkness of the night.
There was probably
literally nothing there.
It was probably that tailless cat.
Tailless cat.
Tailless, yeah. What did I say?
I don't know. Tailless?
Tailless. So where were we?
Okay, so they had gone to Versailles.
Yes.
Thought it was a bit shit.
Yeah.
Gone to find something in the woods, in the grounds that you can't pronounce.
Yeah, they went to find a smaller, like a little cottage on the in the grounds of the gardens.
They used a book, but got lost.
They got lost, so they went off their guidebook tour.
And then they'd seen a woman with a
shaking a white cloth out of a window.
And a plough.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. At this point, they described a feeling of oppression and dreariness coming over them, which is so like Victorian.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. Oh.
I felt wearisome all of a sudden.
I'm very dreary all of a sudden.
coming over them. After which, men who they thought looked like palace gardeners told them to go straight on. Mobley described the men as very dignified officials dressed in long greyish green coats with small three-cornered hats. Jourdain recalled that she noticed a cottage with a woman holding out a jug to a girl in a doorway, describing it as a table vivant, a living pitcher. I really like that description.
So what if it's just a pretty scene? It's
yeah.
A living picture. Yeah, that's nice.
Much like Madame Tussaud's waxworks, Mobley did not observe the cottage, but remembered she felt an atmosphere change. She wrote, "Everything suddenly looked unnatural, therefore unpleasant. Even the trees seemed to become flat and lifeless, like wood worked into a tapestry. There were no effects of light or shade, no wind stirred the trees." I really loved it. They reported reaching the edge of a wood close to the Temple de l'Amour, and coming across a man seated beside a garden kiosk wearing a cloak and a large shady hat. According to Mobley, his appearance was most repulsive, its expression odious. His complexion was dark and rough. Jourdain noted the man slowly turned his face, which was marked by smallpox. His complexion was very dark. The expression was evil and yet unseeing. And though I did not feel he was looking particularly at us, I felt a repugnance to going past him. They said that another man, who they described as tall, with large dark eyes and crisp curling black hair under a large sombrero hat, came up to them and showed them the way to the Petit Trion. Mobley said she noticed a lady sketching on the grass who looked at them after they crossed the bridge to reach the gardens at the front of the palace. She later described the lady as wearing a light summer dress and shady white hat with lots of fair hair. Mobley reported that she thought she was a tourist at first, but the dress appeared to be old-fashioned. Mobley came to believe that the lady was Marie Antoinette. Jourdain, however, did not see the lady. After their return to the palace, they reported they were directed round to the entrance and joined to a party of other visitors. They said they had toured the house, they had tea at the Hotel des Reservoir before returning to Jourdain's apartment. So, the aftermath. According to Jourdain and Mobley, neither women mentioned the incident to one another until a week after leaving Versailles, when Mobley, in a letter to her sister about her trip,
I was like, that was a bit fucking weird, wasn't it?
Started writing about the afternoon of the Versailles incident. She reportedly asked Jourdain if she thought the Petit Trion was haunted. My pronunciation's got better. And Jourdain told her that she thought it was. 3 months later in Oxford, the pair said they compared their notes and decided to write separate accounts of what happened, while also researching their history of the Trion. They thought that they might have seen event that took place on the 10th of August 1792, only 6 weeks before the abolition of the French monarchy, when their Paris was besieged and the King's Swiss guards were massacred. According to their narrative, they visited the Trianon Gardens again on several occasions, but were unable to trace the path they took. Various landmarks, such as the kiosks and the bridge, were missing, and the grounds were full of people. Trying to come up with an explanation, they wondered if they had stumbled across a private party or event booked that day. However, they found nothing had been booked that afternoon. Through their research, they thought they recognised the man they reportedly saw by the kiosk at the... a friend of Marie Antoinette, who herself Mobley had claimed to see. Convinced that the grounds were haunted, they decided to publish their story in a book, An Adventure, 1911, under the pseudonym... Under the pseudonyms of Elizabeth Morrison and Francis Lamont, the book containing the claim that Marie Antoinette had been encountered in 1901 caused a sensation.
It was a simpler time, wasn't it?
However, many critics did not take it seriously on the grounds of the implausibilities and the inconsistencies that it contained. So a review of the book by Eleanor Mildred Sedgwick, great name, in the Proceedings of the Society of Psychical Research suggested the woman had misinterpreted normal events of what they experienced. In 1903, an old map of the Trianon Gardens was found and showed a bridge that the two women had claimed to have crossed that had not been seen on any other map.
Oh, that's good.
And then the identities of the authors, the real ones, not under their pseudonyms, was not made public until 1931.
So what do you reckon? Do you think they did time travel?
Well, I just think it's really interesting. And I think basically I heard of this story before because they... one of the theories is it's one of the first cases of that. I can't remember what it's called. Where they're both under. Like, they have a. Oh, here. Foyle et deux, where it's the shared hallucination, delusion. It's claimed.
But would cause that, or do people just have that out of the blue?
I think it's like when you have.
Or is it when you both share some magic mushrooms?
I think it was insinuated that their pair had a lesbian relationship.
Does make you hallucinate.
I think it's when that people like twins often have it, and siblings who are very close. And I think it's like where you have such an intense relationship that you can go into this phenomenon where you can have shared auditory and. Visual hallucinations. But I found it very interesting in the account that like they had separate experiences, but they both saw the smallpoxed man and described him very similarly. I think that was super interesting. And some of the explanations were that it was a shared hallucination, which is quite possible and just super interesting in itself. But another one is that there was a... a famous poet who used to throw these really ostentatious, like crazy parties, and it's suggested that he may have had
he was having a party and they stumbled into a
fancy dress party, and these two sort of uptight,
not bohemian.
Yeah, exactly. Saw all these people dressed up in these crazy costumes and assumed they'd gone back.
But didn't it say that they looked and there was no events?
Yes, but that was just with Versailles.
I see. Someone else could have just gone in and had a party.
Yeah, well, it was on the grounds, and I think he lived. He reportedly gave parties on the grounds where his friends dressed up in period costume and performed tableau vivant, whatever that is, as part of the party entertainments. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like that's definitely what he came across.
Maybe. Right. Yeah, but I don't think that was just sort of like speculated. Never confirmed that he had it.
No. But that sounds like that sort of plausible. I guess it's interesting that they went back and tried to recreate the route and couldn't find where they had gone.
Yeah, the map thing I found really interesting.
Because if they had stumbled across his party, why wouldn't they have been able to find the route again?
Yeah, exactly.
And
they were saying that there was a kiosk and
because they see
the bridge. I just find that really interesting that they Yeah, I don't know. It's just super. It's just such a great story. That's like, if that's all it is, like a story, I just think it's really great, and I love the visuals, the way they describe it. I just think it's like super fascinating. It always really stuck with me.
That's very good. Yeah. The same thing happened to me.
What, you were walking through Versailles and you?
It's very, very similar.
Very similar. Okay.
So it was one of my friends.
Like, are you being serious?
Yeah. Like, yeah. 18th or... I think it must have been his 18th birthday in London. What?
I'm worried you can't. Can you hear Ollie? I'm asking...
How are they going to answer?
I don't know.
Jesus.
Okay,
so it's my friend's, I guess, 18th or 19th birthday. We're pretty young.
Yeah.
And we were out in London. No, it must have been, I don't know, first year at uni, something like that. And we'd all gone to the pub. And then they all wanted to go to this nightclub in Covent Garden. And so me and one other friend didn't like clubbing, still don't like clubbing to this day. So we were like, well, we don't want to go clubbing. So we're going to go off, have a drink.
And then we'll meet up
with you afterwards. And then we all went back to someone's house for like a house party. So me and this friend, we didn't really know where we were, like where anything would be open.
Where were you in London?
Near Covent Garden.
Okay.
So... we walked out of, like, this nightclub, walked down a couple of streets, and then we saw this bar, and it was, like, underneath a shop, and you walked down some stairs to go into it. And there was, like, a bouncer standing at the door, and we were like, oh, is it open? And he was like, yeah. So we went down, and it was this bar. It was, like, in an old-fashioned house. So there was, like, old-fashioned wallpaper and all stuff like that. And then there was this little hatch in the wall and someone was serving drinks out of them. We went and bought like 2 pints and they were playing like weird old... I know, they were playing like drum and bassy kind of music, but there was like an old couple drinking a cup of tea in there.
This just sounds like... what was that bar in Peckham?
It kind of was, but it was like... but we were in central London, so mm-hmm. It wasn't in Betty's, and it was tiny. It was like smaller than like a living room. There was probably about like 8 people in there or something. So we had this drink, we were like, wow, this place is so cool, it's so weird. And then our friend rang and then was like, oh, we're leaving now. So we went and met up with him and went off on our way. And then like the next time I saw him, I was like, God, that place was so cool, it was so weird. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go back and find it. And I went, and it was when I was working at Ice Storm, and I went on my lunch break. And I remember I walked down all of the streets in this area and I was looking for it. I couldn't find it anywhere. And I found this place that I think was it. But what I thought the bar was just like a closed building with like, and all the windows were boarded up.
Could have just been a speakeasy though.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird that there was like no record of it.
I used to work in a place like that though.
Yeah, I know, Finn, but I can tell. Yeah, but I can tell the difference.
It's a battered old door.
Yeah, I can tell the difference. I'm not an idiot.
I don't know.
I can tell the difference between a speakeasy place. And a place that wasn't a speakeasy and then had like MDF nailed over the windows.
Mm-hmm.
It was surreal. And I like Googled it. I couldn't find any record that existed because I found where I thought it was and I Googled the street and there was nothing. Mm-hmm. No record of it. But it was so creepy because there was like an old couple drinking a cup of tea in there at like midnight on a Friday night surrounded by people drinking cocktails.
That is weird.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you don't think it's weird.
No, I just don't know why you've never told me this before and like...
I have told you before.
Well, I don't remember.
Okay, well thanks for shitting all over my story. Next! You're so negative about all of everything I say. Whenever, you can't see this, but whenever I tell a story, Finn either does that reaction where she's like, well, I don't know why you're saying that, or the other reaction is she does this like mad look at me like you're ruining the podcast of saying this story. So that's why my stories tail off when I tell them. Right, anyway. Ghost of Southwick or whatever it's called.
I don't know. Okay.
Come on.
Are we really having an argument on the podcast?
I'm not having an argument. I'm just stating the fact.
Well, you're picking an argument with me and I will argue back.
Okay. The Ghost of South Island place.
Maybe I don't want to.
Finn's polishing her glasses.
Maybe I don't fucking want to.
Come on.
Okay, here, I'm just...
no, polishing the other lines.
No, but really, I need to polish my glasses so I can see and read. Okay, so this is the South Island Place ghost story.
So South Island Place was the street we lived on.
Yeah, in Oval in South London.
Near Bar Club de Poncho, if you're in the area.
Yeah. It was kind of, in between Kennington and Brixton, on kind of down Brixton Road towards Brixton.
That's exactly where it was.
Yeah.
Glengareth Mansions.
So
that's... Flat 6.
Can you remember? I had to try and remember. I went to the doctors today and I had to try and remember my previous address and I just couldn't. So I'm amazed that you can remember what flat we were in like 6 years ago.
I remember because I always had to do all the bills.
God, that place was hell.
Mm. Anyway. Get onto the haunting.
Anyway, no, so it's important to note that the train line ran directly under
the underground train.
Yes, yeah. The underground train that runs underneath underground in London. Yeah. Funnily enough, the tube between Oval and Brixton ran directly underneath South Island Place. Right, mm-hmm. I'm going into the ghost story now.
Thanks.
So, a South Island Place ghost story, ...
By Finley Place.
By Finley Place.
But written by someone else.
Narrated by
Finley.
Okay, in 1984, a trainee manager was required... Right, I'm going to start again. Narrated by Finley Place. In 1984, a trainee manager was required, in brackets, as part of his training programme, to walk the tunnel of the Northern Line when all the trains had stopped running for the night between Oval and Stockwell stations. Sorry, Stockwell, not Brixton. As he trudged up the dark and silent tubble... fuck's sake.
Trudge up the tubble.
That's quite a good word. I've just made up a great word there. Silent tunnel. Armed only with his battery-powered torch, he came across an older man working in the wider section of the tunnel. The workman was using an old-fashioned tilly lamp. These paraffin-fueled lamps had once been common in use on the underground, but by 1984, they had all but disappeared, having been replaced by the battery-powered torches. The trainee manager stopped for a chat with the workman. The trainee manager made a comment about how unusual it is to see someone using one of the old tilly lamps, to which the workman replied that he preferred the tilly lamp to the new torches. The trainee manager then asked the workman whether this wider section of the tunnel had a name, and he was told it was called South Island Place. Because it was directly under South Island Place, I assume. After saying goodnight to each other, the trainee manager set off again up the tunnel and arrived shortly after at Stockwell Station. He then rang the station supervisor at Oval Station to inform him that he had safely completed the required track walk and the track appeared to be in good working order. He was just about to hang up the receiver when he suddenly remembered the workman he had seen, and so he told the supervisor about the workman he had seen at South Island Place. The supervisor informed him that it was not supposed to be anyone working on that section of the line at night. A search of the track between Oval and Stockwell stations was hastily organised to locate the workman, but no trace of him was ever found. The trainee manager later found out that the ghost of the workman... The trainee manager later found out that the ghost of a workman who had been killed by a train in the 1950s near South Island Place had been seen on numerous occasions. The workman had been operating a very noisy compressor at the time of the accident, and he probably never heard the sound of the approaching train that was about to end his life. The unfortunate driver of the train that killed him reported that at the time of the fatal collision, the man had been carrying a tilly lamp.
Whoa.
Oh, I've got goosebumps.
And that ghost floated up into our flat.
Oh my God. So creepy. I love it. Actually, those two stories have a theme, don't they? Because
ghosts.
Well, no, speaking, because in the other one where she said, in the Versailles one, they spoke to several of the quote-unquote ghosts, and they told them which way to go, didn't they?
Mm.
So that's unusual in a ghost story that they
interact. Normally they don't. They're just like floating spectres that they can't interact with. There's a lot of haunted things about the tube, aren't there?
Loads. Oh my god, there's a do you remember that program we watched?
Ghosts on the Underground.
Oh my god, it was so good. Actually, maybe that's, this story is on there. I'll see if I can find a link there. It was really...
I know it's... There's another thing that's nearby, which is at Kennington. It's where the trains turn around.
Oh, yeah. And that's supposedly really haunted.
Yeah, so
it?
Basically, at this spot on the Northern Line, on the Underground, there's a place where the trains have to... It's like a U-turn where the trains go around. And all of these guards who work on the Underground, like... Literally everyone in this documentary says that they've seen, like, a ghost in there at some point. Because basically the train goes in and then it turns all the lights off. Bit creepy. And then you have to walk through and check that no one's accidentally been left on the train.
And and they always say they see someone.
Yeah, they always, like, see people standing in the train.
Oh!
And then they go to tell them to get off and they disappear.
Oh my god, it's so creepy. But yeah, I'll see if I can find that documentary. It was on quite a few years ago, but I... think we watched it again on, like...
I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on YouTube. I'll see if I can find it, because it's really entertaining. It's, like, basically interviewing the people who work on the tube and their stories. Oh, my God, it's so good. I just like the whole story aspect of ghost stories. It's just...
Well, I think
like
it's...
hearing tales.
It's sort of a... It doesn't really matter whether you think it's true or not, but it's kind of interesting, because I think it's, like, modern folklore.
Yeah, totally.
And I think it's interesting because it's just people talking about something unusual that's outside the normal realm of everyday life. It's like, it's showing that people are sort of curious and think there are these, whether you believe in ghosts or not, it's probably like a good thing that there are people who think that there's weirder, interesting things happening than just like, oh, there's just nothing there.
Yeah.
It's like if you met someone, they're like, no, there's no ghosts or aliens or conspiracies or
this
monsters.
This is boring.
So there probably aren't, but like...
It's fun to speculate, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like, I always remember hearing Jimmy Carr, the comedian, being interviewed. And he was like, if someone tells you a funny story and it's funny, he was like, he was saying like basically he doesn't understand why people question funny stories, because he's like, doesn't matter if it didn't really happen. If someone tells you a story and it's really funny, like...
Oh, he means like sort of like in stand-up where...
Yeah, I think
he... Embellish things.
Yeah, exactly.
What's it matter? Like, it made you laugh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, he was like, people always want to question comedians. Like, did that really happen or not? And he was like...
What's it matter?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a funny...
It did its job.
And that's kind of like a ghost story. It's like...
Yeah.
It's just a good, interesting story.
Very, very much so. What else have got on my list? Oh yeah, my recommendations this week. I would recommend The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
I've seen that documentary too.
Yes, that's why I thought I'd bring it up so we can talk about it. So the musician, Daniel Johnston, he died 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, been in the news a lot.
Yeah, because he was very influential to a lot of people. He was made famous by Kurt Cobain. He used to wear his t-shirt a lot.
So he's a musician and he was from Texas, I think. And he... Were you going to go into all of this or shall I say it?
No, you go for it, babe.
So he's this musician, he was in Texas. And he was just... Despite the fact they say this many times in the documentary... He was definitely an outsider artist, outsider musician.
Oh, 100%. They compared him... Who do they compare him to? Duchamp and...
Picasso.
Picasso. And it's like, no, he's an outsider artist. Like, I'm not...
I was going to say about him being a musician first.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, he just, like, stayed in his bedroom, made weird little songs, didn't do very well at school, just wrote thousands of these strange little, like, love songs. And he used to record tapes and just hand them out to literally anyone. They said he worked in McDonald's for a while, and every time people came in and got like a Happy Meal or anything, he'd give them a cassette of his music with it as well. They said one thing which was really good in the documentary is that he didn't know how to duplicate tapes. So for quite a lot of the time, he would re-record every single album. So he'd sing and record the whole album and then take that tape out and put another one in and re-sing and
so
record
sweet.
It. And just do them over and over again. Then he'd do them all with handmade labels and just hand them out.
There's just something so like pure about it. It's just...
But then basically it sort of turned out that he was bipolar.
Yeah, he had
I think he was bipolar and a couple of other issues.
I think he did have
schizophrenia. It seemed like it was sort of like they weren't... He didn't really seem to be that well diagnosed, particularly.
Yeah, I think he had, like, psychotic instances, and I don't know whether that was just his, like, mania from bipolar or whether it was, like, schizophrenia. I think he probably had quite a few diagnoses over his lifetime or whatever.
And this documentary is just following him, his life from when he's starting out as a teenager, making the tapes and giving them out to people in McDonald's, to this, like, he got this sort of, like, real near to, like, worldwide fame, and then, obviously, because of his problems, that didn't really work out, and then just all these, like, mad things that happened to him, the people he interacted with, there's, like, stories about Sonic Youth trying to find him because he got lost in New York and they're driving around all night.
Yeah, so he's just, like, there's so many crazy, like, about him, like, he crashed a plane because he thought
he was in a plane with his dad.
Incident.
And he was, while in the plane, suddenly thought he was Casper the Friendly Ghost and needed to get out of the plane. So he took the keys out of the plane's ignition and threw them out of the window.
So that his dad had to, like, land the plane.
Crash land the plane.
Yeah.
It's like, and just, like, all these mad stories. And he's such an interesting guy because his music's... He's not very good at playing musical instruments and he's not a good singer, but he writes these really sincere lyrics. They're sort of like very naive poetry, but they're like...
They're just really like pure and like... Yeah. So he got like obsessed with this woman called Laurie in his...
When he was like 16.
Yeah, and he just wrote like so many... Well, probably hundreds of songs just about her, even though... Like, he hadn't spoken to her for years, and they
never
had... Yeah,
he's, like, 45, and he's still writing songs
about her.
He's still writing,
like, it's obsessive, like, and he, I don't know, just had, like, this really, like, crazy pure love for her, even though, like, they never had a romantic relationship.
Which, now we're describing it, sounds terrifying, but it's in a very pure way.
Yeah, I don't know, it's almost like he's childlike, isn't it? But, yeah, it's such an interesting documentary, really interesting guy, and, yeah, I think... I was like, I don't think I've ever heard of him. And then Ollie played me a couple of his songs and I was like, oh yeah, they're quite, I think they're used in quite a lot of soundtracks.
There's a few of them.
I'll link a couple of the best ones, I think, anyway, so you can listen to them because they're really lovely. But I listened, he's written so many songs and I listened to quite a lot of them and some of them are just, in this documentary, they are literally... They're practically saying he's bigger than Jesus. It's ridiculous. They're like, every song is pure gold. And I was like, really? Because I listened to some of them and there's literally like just the ramblings of a literal madman.
I mean, I think obviously the problem slightly is that if you like someone enough to make a documentary about them, you probably really, really like them.
I mean, he obviously like is incredibly talented, like... lyrically, like the lyrics are beautiful and like so he's so good at storytelling, but he can't sing and he plays the piano on a lot of the songs and they're really charming.
Yeah, it's like a sort of quirky way of like clinkety blonkety.
Yeah, they're really lovely, but I mean I wouldn't say he was particularly gifted at the piano. And then like he just decided in the documentary he started doing live shows and he just decided that because lots of musicians in Austin at the time all played folk guitar, he decided, oh, I'll play that as well. And yeah,
he literally couldn't
play
the guitar.
He could not play the guitar. And like, it's great, like in some of the, I don't know, I found the documentary quite sad as well because it's like...
Oh, it's definitely sad.
They're just so, people I think are so blinded by the idea of him that they kind of overlook his mental illness, and I think maybe he could have got more help
Well, I think that's quite a big part of the documentary.
Like, me and Ollie, a couple of times, like, during the documentary, were like, how did nobody section him? Like, he's clearly very unwell. And they're all like, oh, well, it's just Daniel. And it's like, no, it's not. He's clearly really unwell.
Well, they sort of talk about it and they're saying, like, there's that idea that, you know, you don't want to stifle someone's mad genius.
I think.
And they were, I think, a lot of the people around him didn't want to be known as the person that stopped his creativity.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's like, I think one of the guys even says in the documentary, he's like, you don't want to be the person that stopped, like, Picasso.
Yeah.
You know, when he was doing his paintings and supposedly cutting his ear off.
No, that's
Van Gogh. Van Gogh. Wait, what was... no, wait, what were they saying in... Oh, I can't remember. They're talking about it in the documentary and they're saying...
We all know what you mean, though.
You don't want to be that person that stifles the person if they're going through these, like, mad creative fits.
Yeah.
But his were next level.
Yeah. But anyway...
Because Van Gogh never thought he was Casper the Friendly Ghost.
As far as we know, anyway.
That's true. He was quite pale.
But I'll link the trailer.
Yeah.
How do we watch it? Do we just find it?
You can just get it on, like, Google Play and iTunes and all that kind of stuff.
So, yeah, I'll link you the trailer.
It's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I really recommend it. And then the other thing that I wanted to recommend that I'm absolutely hooked on at the moment is Small Town Dicks. It's a true crime podcast.
Excuse me.
Small Town Bleeps. Dicks. It's a true crime podcast hosted by Yardley Smith, who is the voice of Lisa Simpson in The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the website now, and it says that it's just hosted by her, but maybe, like, it's hosted by another woman?
Maybe she doesn't have a picture.
I don't know. Maybe this is, like, an updated version, like, because I'm only on this beginning of the second series, so maybe that person dropped off and that's why.
Okay.
So I'll just stick with Yardley Smith. And then the co-producers of it are twins called Detective Dan and Detective Dave, and they are both detectives who work in a small town in America, and it's not specified where.
So they're anonymous.
Mm-hmm. And they just each episode tell a story, like, about a memorable case that they had. And if you like first responder stories and you like 911 calls and you like listening to interviews, like actual police tapes of interviews, criminals being interviewed, then this is the podcast for you. It is very in-depth. They do not skimp on the detail.
Is it funny?
In parts, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it was ha-ha funny, but it has its funny moments.
All right. I just kind of thought because she's in The Simpsons that it'd be jokey, but...
They crack a joke here and there, but it's largely serious and quite dry because I suppose police officers... They're quite, like, deadpan and matter-of-fact about it, the way that police officers are, which I really enjoy. Yeah, I just love it. And I listened to one today where Yardley Smith, Lisa Simpson's, tells her story about how when she was stalked, and it is...
Scary shit.
Wow. Really scary. Like you would never want to be famous kind of level of creepy.
Oh.
And then the other presenter, who for some reason is not named on the website, in the first series, I think it's basically like how these women kind of got interested in true crime, that these kind of like really terrifying situations happened to them.
Yeah.
The other one, she was getting into her car... like, I think she'd just been to work or just been to see a friend, so she was outside her house in her car, was on the phone to her boyfriend, so sat in her car for like a couple of minutes while she finished up her phone call, then got out to go into the house, and she heard a noise and turned around, and a man popped up from under her car, and she was just like in shock, and he grabbed her by the throat, so she was like, oh fuck, and she said she just went into like crisis mode and started, she didn't know why, just like kept swearing at him, and she was like telling him to fuck off or something, like over and over and over again. She was like, I just couldn't control it. It was just coming out of my mouth and I started flailing around. And then another man popped up from under the car as well. And he had a knife. So then by this point, she just stopped flailing. Was just like, oh shit, this is really bad. And he picked her up by the legs and the other person had her by the throat. And then this bloody car pulled up with a gang of guys in it. And they were like shouting at them, get in the car, get in the car. And she like looked up at the guy who held her by the throat. And she said she could smell his fear, which, I mean, such a bizarre thing to say and think. But she said she smelt his fear, which I just think she was like, it's so interesting that I thought that, because it's like almost like she went into a primal kind of state.
Right.
And she said she like made eye contact with him and he just apparently looked at the other guy and was just like, no, not her. And then just like they put her down and they got in the car and drove off. Yeah.
Well, what was going on?
Apparently it was a gang initiation thing.
Wow. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Fucking scary, right?
Yeah. Lucky you don't have a car then.
Yeah, it's lucky. But yeah, it's just good. And it's really entertaining stories like, well, it's entertaining, I feel like, yeah. Is the wrong word.
Entertaining for you, mm-hmm. A person who likes podcasts about the worst.
No, but I like it because they have like actual, like the police, the detectives also have like very, I like it because they have very sound like advice into what to do in these situations. And they were talking about like in that situation where she was just like swearing at them. She was just like, I didn't know, like I just couldn't help it. And they both were like, the goofy loop. And it's like basically where your body like goes into this weird sort of like state where it's like tries one thing like automatically and then that doesn't work. So you just kind of like get stuck in that kind of loop where your brain's trying to process what's happening.
Right.
And so like police officers, like normal people, they can't like process stressful situations like that, so they get stuck in this weird like goofy loop is what the police officers call them, whereas police are like trained to snap out of it.
Right. Wow. That's interesting.
But like, yeah, they've got like quite a lot of like they were just like, don't ever sit in your car, like if you don't when it's like get in your car and go, don't sit in your car like when it's outside, because people can get in the fucking back, people can get underneath it, you know, people can, it's making yourself vulnerable.
That's a paranoid way to live your life.
Well, I don't know, I just think that's like sensible, isn't it? And yeah. I like hearing stuff like that as a woman, because like,
so now every time we get in the car, you're going to be like, put your foot down. Wheel spin away.
No, because I'd be with you. But if I was on my own and could drive, say, then I wouldn't be sitting there on my own.
Okay.
But anyway, I just really like it.
All right, I'll give it a listen.
I think I've listened to about
100 episodes.
Yeah, I've listened to, I've probably listened to about like 24-30 hours in the last like couple of days.
In the last 24-30 hours.
Yeah, I'm like obsessed with it. I've listened to so many of this.
But it's a nice feeling when you find a new podcast that you're like,
I love
it.
And there's a whole back, like, so I think this is, it's on the fifth series, so I've got so many to get through. So it's like, yes, more. And it's just going to be sad when I get to the end.
I hate that, because when you're going through like a back catalogue, there's no waiting. You've just got like unlimited.
Yeah, you're like, more.
And then
you catch
up and you're like, oh,
I've got to wait a week? This
I'm
is bullshit.
I'm not waiting a whole week for this. That's when they get you with the bloody Patreon, isn't it? Bastards.
Those bastards.
Why should I give you money for something I enjoy?
Exactly. Well, I don't agree, because I sign up to Patreon and I hope to maybe set my own up one day. If I can get my act together.
Get your act together.
And get a camera.
Get a camera. Get your act together.
I mean, I don't know if anyone would actually sign up, but you never know if you don't try.
I'll sign up. I'll donate you £1 a month, then I.
Oh my god! Can you imagine how depressing that is? You have one subscriber, and it's your husband, and he only gives you a quid.
I mean, but also it was like really adamant. It was like messaging you, like, when's new content coming?
Wait for that sweet content.
Oh. I will unsubscribe if there's no new content. Like,
your one subscriber just goes.
I'm sitting on the sofa just staring at you. Your one subscriber goes. Oh, shit.
So that's my life soon.
That is like the biggest fear, is that like you set up a Patreon and then like you did like all the different tiers and you did one and it was like £50 a month and they got like private chat with you, sketchbook views, vlog, podcast, and just one person signed up and you were just like...
That's kind of what puts me off it, because I'm just like, oh my God, what if it, and what if it's like my mum or something?
Well, your mum doesn't listen to this, does she?
No. She doesn't know what a podcast is.
Also, she's
we're safe here.
She's too tight. She'd never pay you £50 a month.
Oh my God, she totally wouldn't.
How much did she want to buy that painting off you from?
£5.
Yeah.
My own mother offered me £5 for one of my paintings.
Yeah, she was like, oh, well, I was hoping you'd do me a discount. And Finn was like, well, I don't really do discounts. And then she was like, I was just hoping I'd pay like a bit less, like £5.
And I was like, you actually have
it was another. So insulting.
My own mother... Trying to undercut
I think if you're buying something off a friend, you should not be the one who initiates the discount.
No.
They are allowed to offer a discount.
Oh, like, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're a good friend, then pay your good friend full price to support them.
Exactly. If it's your daughter.
If it's your daughter, mother. You definitely shouldn't give a tip. Just hashtag saying. Well, no, I mean, I give discounts to my friends and stuff, like, but I feel like it's my discretion. It's
yeah, that's what I mean. It's up to you. You can give a discount to whoever you want.
Yeah.
But you should never ask people for a discount.
No.
Unless you're buying art off an art gallery, then always ask for a discount. But that's different.
Hashtag insider goss there.
We talked about this before.
Yeah, we did.
Anyway, that's enough of the podcast for 1 week.
Wait, no, we've got, like, oh my God, this is so bad, I'm so sorry. So, like, someone left us, a very kind, lovely person left us a review.
Oh, nice.
We've been completely useless, as it was written on the 12th of August, I can see here.
Oh, Finlay.
Oh, Jesus, we've let you down, I'm so sorry. So, Alisa listens.
Excuse me?
Alisa.
Oh, yeah. Finn's pronouncing it like that because there's lots of E's and A's.
Alisa listens.
Wait, I'm reading this upside down. Are you sure that's not just how you spell Alisa?
No. Alisa is L-E-S-A? I'm not entirely sure now.
You may be mocking the correct way that someone spells their name. Who's this person? Finley. Why is there so many N's in the middle? So that's just how you spell your name.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Sorry.
Sorry on so many levels. Simply Lovely says, Lisa. My favourite podcast for calming down and relaxing at the moment. Finney and Ollie are literally just like the friend couple you can listen to for hours without realising you've started staring at them creepily in your obsession. Thanks for providing a cute little bit of... Oh, wait. A little bit of cuteness and niceness in my week, guys. P.S. Tove needs to speak up too.
Well, Tove speaks way too much on this podcast.
I mean, Alisa... I mean, Tova needs to shut the fuck up.
Well, there she's gone now.
Oh my God, don't speak too soon. Shh.
Stay on the sofa.
Oh my God, I'm not even joking. She senses that we're recording. She does something annoying. She's not, I mean, she is quite an annoying dog in the nicest, most loving possible way.
Yeah, sure.
But I swear to God, she like senses that we're doing this and like cue.
Well, I think
asking to go out. Barking, doing something annoying.
It's because really the 1 hour a week where we're not like waiting on her beck and call to do whatever she wants.
I legit think it's because she's not getting attention.
Yeah, she's fuming.
She's such an attention whore, and it's completely my fault.
Yeah,
it's all my own doing.
And then like 1 second later, Pim's like, "Dress up and I'll photograph you while you dance for treats." I don't know where she gets it from.
It's because like every second of the waking day, I'm like, oh my God, you're such a good girl. Oh my God, why are you so precious? I love you so much. Just follow her around
the
house.
Me carrying her downstairs on a velvet cushion to feed her treats in the morning.
I legit do like a little cheer thing with her in the mornings where I just follow her around stomping, cheering.
Yeah.
I mean maybe
no wonder she's a little bit big-headed.
And I don't think I've never ever been someone's obsession before. I'm imagining when she was writing this that she's just staring at a framed photo that she's got of us on her desk. I don't know why.
I think you might really too much into it. I think it might just be a phrase.
I mean, I wouldn't even say you were obsessed with me. I mean, I'm obsessed with you, obviously.
Of course.
Obviously. But thanks so much lovely review, and I'm so sorry it's taken so long to say thank you, because
I'm so sorry there's a 50% chance that Finn insulted your name.
I'm very sorry about that.
I'm going to read this after the podcast and be like, oh Finn. What have you done?
No, thank you so much. We do genuinely really appreciate
just listening and writing in.
Also, just like, so like, I've had a couple of people this week like message me saying that they love listening to the podcast, and it legit makes my day when I hear from people saying that they like this, because...
So whether you do so or nice. Not, just message Finn and tell her, because it makes me really
It makes worried. Me so happy, like beyond happy.
And it's taking me so long to set up all these fake Instagram accounts to message Finn at the moment, just to keep her happy. So your support would be appreciated.
You guys, like, thanks so much for listening and supporting us and being lovely. Like, just, yeah, always makes my day when I hear from you and makes me happy, and I hope we make you happy too. And I think it's nice that all of our reviews have been sort of like saying that we're relaxing and like it.
Yes, we can tap into the ASMR market with our soothing podcast.
Well, I just want... It's nice, like... I think we've spoken about this, like, early on in the podcast, where there are a lot of those sort of, like, sort of artists encouraging kind of, like, creativity podcasts, and they always just, like, bum me out.
Yeah.
And so I'm so happy that, like, this is a positive thing for people to listen to, because I would hate for anyone to, like, look at anything I do or listen to anything, any one of these podcasts, and think that, I don't know, that it would make them feel down about.
No.
Because me and Ollie are literally just like bumbling through life.
Yeah.
We do not have our shit together. We're just trying our best.
Also, this isn't a very good art advice podcast, because we barely mentioned art once in this whole podcast.
Yeah, we're kind of useless at that.
Maybe let's both think of an artist for next week.
Yeah, we've kind of let that like fall by the wayside.
Whatever.
I think it's just because...
There's no theme. We can just do whatever
we
want.
I get so overexcited by like...
Hedgehogs. Time travellers.
Weird
ghosts.
Stories that I just kind of forget about the artist side of it.
Yeah.
Also, like, I think... Because art is like my literal whole life. Like, it's all I think about all day, every day. I wake up, do art till I drop, basically. So, like, it's quite nice to sit down and, like, not...
Yeah, get away from it.
Yeah, not think and talk about it. So.
Also, I find, like, it's a difficult thing to talk about on an audio medium.
Totally. Well, that's why it'd be good if I could get, like, a camera going, that maybe I could do, like, little videos.
You could do a little, like, PowerPoint presentations of art you like.
Yeah.
Oh, this is Finn. This is the first picture. Just click the slider.
The slide. Oh, I'll just press the wrong button.
The
there.
Slide's in upside down. Sorry about that.
I don't know. And I'd like to, like, I mean, quite a lot of people ask me for, like, advice. And number one, I don't really feel like I'm qualified enough to give people advice. I mean, maybe technically now, I feel like I'm practically quite skilled at painting. But, like, career-wise, like, don't ask me, because I'm just a bit useless. And yeah, also, like, how are you supposed to give art advice, like, on a podcast?
I don't know if that's true. I think if someone asks you for advice, then you are qualified enough to give advice, because otherwise they wouldn't be asking you.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah.
Maybe I just need more confidence in myself.
Gotta be more half glass full, less half glass empty.
Yeah, I've always been like that, though. Although I kind of feel like I'm a pessimist in a kind of, like...
Well, in an optimistic way.
Well, if that's a thing.
It's not.
Well, just, I mean, this is against what Brianne Brown says, that vulnerability book that I said, that apparently, like, that's a very, like, catastrophizing and not living for joy way, whereas I always, like, assume the glass is half empty, so then I'm not disappointed when it is. And if it is full, then I'm...
It's a nice surprise.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I look at life, I guess. But that's not really living for... Because it means like you don't appreciate joy when you have it, because you're expecting it to go wrong.
Well, I don't think you can ever change how you are wired in that respect. Just read it. You can keep reading books where they tell you, be half glass full, but that's not really how it works. So you can't be like, oh yeah, I am going to be.
No, totally. But I would say that since I read that, it's made me realise that I am like that. So like when I start catastrophizing, I definitely like acknowledge it now, like, oh, I'm doing that again. Mm. I need to not like worry about that or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I try to anyway, like be more mindful of like how I'm thinking. Anyway, gone off on a bit of a tangent there. Yeah.
As your therapist, I think just keep doing as you're doing. And
okay, thank you.
I'm going to have to invoice you for this session now. It's £100.
Oh, God. I'm broke. Thanks, you guys. I've got a really dry mouth now. I think I need a...
drink.
Yeah, I need to get another beer because we finished our delicious grapefruit schloffen poppins. Thank you for listening, guys. Oh god, I feel like this has been quite a long one. Thank you for listening, guys, and I hope you've enjoyed this. And if you have anything you want to talk to us about, then DM us at Finley Elliott Portraits, at Ollie Place, Like a Fireplace on Instagram. Email.
Do you think people are searching Ollie Place Like a Fireplace and just I'm not coming up?
Maybe.
Because you always say it.
Oh my god, that's why you've probably got no followers.
That's why I've only got one follower. And it's you, and you unfollow me.
They'll get you back for the Patreon, yeah. Future Ollie. Email thecutelifepodcast@gmail.com. Rate. Review. We'll read it out 3 months later.
We'll insult you.
We'll insult your name. And tell your friends and share.
Tell your enemies.
Tell your enemies. squirrels, passing squirrels, hedgehogs. Up great
write
trees.
Down the URL to this podcast on a piece of paper, stick it on a hedgehog's quill and send it on their way.
Oh, they're so cute.
That's the only way we have to tell our podcast.
And everything we've talked about will be in the show notes, as always. Or if, like, we've missed anything, just feel free to message me, because I'm...
That's what Finn's here for.
Yeah, I'm usually quite good at replying to people, so... Yeah, just let me know, and...
Well, I hope you are. It's part of your job.
Okay. I try and be. It's quite hard to keep up with DMs sometimes. Anyway.
That's another boring story for another boring podcast.
Exactly. That's fun next week. So next week, I think you should tell me all the stories, because I did such a great job in this one.
Okay.
Yeah? Mm. Is that a deal?
Yeah.
Wicked. Okay. Love you. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.